The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement. I hope I find you well wherever you are, listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie, on the Radio Kerry app or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. It is a beautiful, mild morning this morning here in the Kingdom. So I hope you're enjoying your weekend and well done to everyone who took part and is taking part in Darkness into Light as well. You had a lovely morning for it. On the Saturday Supplement, we'll hear from Backroom Drama Group in Castle Island, who are putting on a play in the Ivy Leaf Arts Centre in Castle Island on the 14th, the 15th, 16th and 17th of May, written by Maurice O'Connell from Kiel Duff, called Defend the Yellow Mantle. It is the story of the life of Mick Murphy, the Iron Man from Sugraena, outside Carras Éireann, who won the 1958 Ross Talton. And maybe you've memories of Mike, maybe you met him yourself. Get in touch with us, 066-712-3666. Dervla's take your calls. You can text or WhatsApp 083-300-3300. We'll also hear the final episode of a five-part series, Come West Along the Feel, the story of the River Feel. And it's the final episode today. And we'll have our Kerry County Council Creative Kingdom letting you know what's going on in the arts world. And if that wasn't enough, we'll hear from Mary Cullity O'Sullivan, who along with her two choirs are doing an event for the Kerry Hospice Foundation on Wednesday, May 20th in Listowel. Like I said, get in touch with us, 066-712-3666. Dervla's taking your calls. You can text WhatsApp 083-300-3300. Now, I mentioned Backroom Drama Group in Castle Island are putting on a play in the Ivy Leaf Arts Centre, Castle Island, on the 14th, 15th, 16th and 17th of May, written by Maurice O'Connell from Kiel Duff, called Defend the Yellow Mantle. It is the story of the life of Mick Murphy, the Iron Man from Sugraena, outside Carras Éireann, who won the 1958 Ross Talton. And I'm delighted to say, Maurice joins us now, along with Danny O'Sullivan, who plays a number of characters in the play. Gentlemen, you're both very welcome. How are you this morning?
Very good indeed.
Morning, Joe.
Good. Maurice, I suppose, firstly, tell us, for people that don't know, who was Mick Murphy?
Mick was a great Kerry legend, actually. He won the 1958 Ross Talton the Heron in amazing circumstances. But not alone that, he was a very unique character, an amazing man. Amazing life. And when I was looking for a character for stage to write about, the minute I came upon him and started doing a bit of research into him, I knew straight away he was my man. And the team behind this play, Joe, is inspiration. And after reading and doing research into him, I knew straight away that we were going to have plenty inspiration here because of what he achieved and the way he achieved it. A very tough life, worked very hard, born in 1934, a life of great hardship and suffering. He worked in quarries, farm labourers, but he never gave up on life, and that was the great thing about him. As I said, he went on to win the 1958, but he was also involved in a lot of other activities, which made him so interesting. He was a boxer, a wrestler. He was a great athlete as well, a runner. And later on in his middle life, he actually took up playing darts. He went on to become a professional darts player in England. So an ideal character for stage, when you're writing a character, and that you always look for someone that's going to hold the audience and the attention of the audience. And there's no doubt, this man has all them qualities.
Yeah, he ran away with the circus too, I think. And when you mention character, He was a character, though, wasn't he?
Without a doubt, Joe. And, you know, from 7 years of age, his neighbour, Joe Burke, who was a farmer, actually. But Joe used to always perform with the travelling circuses that came to town at that time, the likes of Duffy's and Fawcett's and so forth. And he took Mick under his wing and brought him along with him and got him involved in a lot of his circus acts. Of course, straight away, Mick was hooked. And he enjoyed every minute of it. And went on then and met a lot of the circus performers and that, who taught him, you know, a lot about weight training and diets and so forth. And as he said himself, these were the men who made him a man. At 14 years of age, he said, with his all his training and so forth, he said he could compete with any man. And, you know, they were the people who really made him what he was. And he enjoyed every minute. And he, throughout his whole life, he always went back to doing bits of circus performing, you know, street performing, wherever he was, you know, in London or wherever. He used to often venture out there and start doing a few circus acts like fire blazing, juggling. He said he was able to walk a mile backwards on his hands, and that he was quite an amazing, amazing man.
Yeah. You might read a piece from the play, but while you're getting that ready, Danny, you actually met him.
I did, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Amazing. My great friend in Castle Island, Michael Murphy, Mickey Murphy, the famous greyhound trainer, was a fantastic athlete himself at around the same time that Mick was in action. And Michael always said to me, Danny, we have to go down to meet him. So eventually, about 20 years ago, we went down there and we went looking for his house. And we were driving past and I said, Michael, that's him. And he says, never. And there he was. He was on a walker at the time. And we got out of the car and he said, oh my God, Mickey Murphy. He said, come on in. So we went in and we were there for about 2 hours, I'd say. We had a great conversation. And it was a real, such a privilege for me to meet him, like, you know.
Yeah.
And to think all this time later that I'm in a play involving him is real. It's amazing.
That's
honestly
surreal, isn't it?
It's surreal, actually, yeah. But I'm honoured, really.
Yeah. There was no mod cons in that house, I'd say.
No, there was no mod cons. Yeah. But, you know, he made us very welcome and he showed me around. He said, come down, look at my weights. And I said, where are the weights? They're up in the wall, big concrete blocks. He says, try and move them. I said, forget about it. But, oh, God, he was lovely. And the same day, actually, the Ross were in Carasavine, I think, and he had about 3 or 4 jumpers on him. And he says, look at this. He took off the jumpers, and they were after giving him the yellow jersey.
Oh, wow.
And he was emotional about it. Like,
yeah, because that's that scene in Convict of the Road was the RT Doc on One piece, and he's there cheering the cyclists on at the start, isn't it? Yeah, it's a lovely kind of a scene. Danny, what do you do in the play?
Well, I play a few roles in it, but my main role would be as do a bit of poetry.
Mm.
And fair play to Morris. When I got the script first, I thought, man, this is unbelievable and quite a tribute to Mick. And I thought, I'm so happy to be involved with it, like, you know.
Yeah, and that's it. It's a tribute to this great man. His life is a movie, though, really, Morris. So you have a piece for us. What are you going to perform there?
Yeah, just a little snippet out of the play itself, Joe. Like, as I said, I've been involved in writing for many years and poetry and stuff like that. And we have a few poetic verses put in throughout the play at the right moments as well and that. And the very start of the play starts off with a little poetic verse. The agony, the anguish, faces etched in pain, the torment, the suffering, the grinding of the chain, hammering on the pedals, that forceful pelvic thrust, cranking up that rhythm with lungs near ready to burst, geared to answer every surge and prepared to execute, attack that pack with venom and leave them in pursuit. Convicts of the road, cycle racing is no game. A legend of the saddle, Mick Murphy is the name. So it sets the tone for the play, Joe, as it goes along then.
Yeah, that was good. Very well performed as well. I was ready to get up on the bike there with Mick there. It was absolutely excellent. You mentioned inspiration, and didn't he drink, like, blood, cow's blood, because the Maasai warriors did it or something, wasn't
he
there?
He did indeed, Joe. You know, he was, even though he didn't go to school for long himself, as he said, a few days every year, his mother taught him, actually, but he was big into reading, and he had read where African warriors had drank cow's blood for over 1,000 years. So when he was cycling and that, after warm-up or even during the Ross itself, he would cycle about 30 miles to warm down, and then he would go into a field and start lifting weights, and if he saw a cow, he would have a little penknife in his sock and come along and slit a vein and fill up his water bottle, and off he went.
And the other inspirational thing is even that Ross that he won, he had to overcome great obstacles, you know, to win that.
He did indeed, Joe, you know, on stage three, actually, from Clonakilty to Tralee, he actually got a terrible fall and dislocated his shoulder. He was in agony. But, you know, fair play now to another cyclist, Kerry cyclist, Gene Mangan.
Who's well known, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Gene came along and got him up. Gene gave him his bike, and off he went, covered in blood, and continued on, and amazingly crossed the finishing line with the main group, holding on to that yellow jersey that he actually won in the second stage. Dan Ahern actually won the first stage of that. Dan is a Ballymac man. So Dan won the first stage. Mick Murphy hit a bridge 2 miles from the finish and that, and was down. Mick came in second. But he won the second stage, got the yellow jersey, and held on to that yellow jersey right to the very end, which was amazing achievement considering the amount of pain he was under.
Mm. You know. Who's involved in the play? There's a cast of six, is there?
We have a cast of six in this, Joe, our backroom drama group, which we formed last year, actually. It's made up of actors from different drama groups. We all came together there in Castle Island. And at the back room, actually, of Tom McCarthy's pub in Castle Island, we sat down, had a bit of a chat, and you know something? We said we'd set up a drama group. And we did, and of course, we had to get a name for it, and there we were in the back room. Someone shouted, "Back room," and away we went. And I just want to say thanks to Tom McCarthy also, actually, who's been inspirational in the setting up of the drama group, because he sponsored us big time with the formation of it. So we have a wonderful group, as I said, made up of actors from all over the county, basically all the way from Valentia Island, you know, Corra, Knocknagoshal, Castle Island, Mid Kerry, and so we've actors from all over the county.
And who's directed?
Sheila Nix, actually. Sheila's the chairperson of our drama group as well. A wonderful lady, an inspiring lady. She's the one that keeps us all in control and keeps us motivated along the way.
Very good. We'll find out a bit more about it. We're going to go to a break, and maybe, Danny, we might get you to perform a piece as well. After that, we'll take a break with more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart.
That's what you're listening. I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. Get in touch with us, 066-712-3666. Derval, let's take your calls. You can text WhatsApp 083-300-300. We have Morris O'Connell, the writer of this new play, in studio with us. Backroom Drama Group in Castle Island are putting on a play in the Ivy Leaf Arts Centre, Castle Island, on the 14th, 15th, 16th and 17th of May. And it is the story, of course, of Mick Murphy, the Iron Man, from Sugrane outside Carsaveen, who won the 1958 Ross Talton. Danny Sullivan plays a number of characters in it, and we were talking about Sugrane there, Danny, and you're going to do a piece in relation to that.
Yes, it's about the beautiful area around Sugrane, around Mick's home. So will I do it now, if you do? Okay. Sugrane, this landscape, now peaceful and serene, but relics of its hardship still there to be seen. Stink of the famine still hangs on those bushes all around. That workhouse, a reminder, down there in unmarked graves can be found. Their suffering now over, their souls now at ease, but the evergreens still shiver in the cool mountain breeze. And our patriots, of course, always remembered will they, neath the shadow of Beena Tee, the tans they kept at bay. And that derelict ruin in the valley down below, birthplace of our liberator, beside where the peaceful Carron does flow. Towering over the town once the fort of Sivean, that granite church to O'Connell all around can be seen, whispering across the half door of the mind, that monument to Sigerson close by you will find. Those days of his youth, from the mountain to the sea, this landscape he portrayed in both song and poetry. But on a cool spring day in 1934, another legend now born on this landscape once more. Fearless and determined, a different breed now was he. The Iron Man had arrived to stamp his name in history.
Well done, Danny. Morris, that's all you're writing, is it?
Yes, sir.
It's amazing. Well done. And I know all those areas you're talking about and the kind of the meaning behind them as well. And there's even the boys of Bonner Shroud inside there as
that's
well.
That's right.
And yeah, it's absolutely fantastic the way it's described. So that's a sample of what you can expect in the Ivy Leaf on the 14th, 15th, 16th and 17th of May. Morris, how can people avail of tickets?
Yes, people can book tickets on the following phone number, Joe, there, 089-985-9744, or WhatsApp the number also if they want.
Yeah, so you'd advise booking beforehand, not just rock you up.
I would, yeah, the tickets are going fairly well at the moment, Joe, yeah. And that, you know, as I say, the character in question, and that a lot of people knew him, especially cyclists and so forth, would be very interested in this, so they are moving pretty rapid, so I would advise people to book as soon as possible.
Okay, so it's 089-985-9744. And what time are the performances on it each night?
8 p.m. each night.
Perfect, and that's the Ivy Leaf in Castle Island. Morris, Danny, it was an absolute pleasure. Thanks a million
for coming. Thank you so much.
And as they say in the theatre business, break a leg.
Thank you.
I know if Mick broke a leg, he'd continue on.
He would, for sure.
And now we're changing tack, but I'm delighted to say we're joined in studio by Mary Cullity O'Sullivan, and her two choirs are doing an event for the Kerry Hospice Foundation on Wednesday, May 20th in Listowel. And we're also joined by one of the members of those choirs, Marish O'Leara. You're very welcome. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Good. And Mary Cullity, you've been on before, an absolute outstanding, talented performer. Tell us about what's going on.
Well, we're having a fundraiser, as you said, for the Kerry Hospice Foundation in memory of one of our dear choir members, Bill Doyle. He passed away from cancer last year. He got sick very quickly, and before we knew it, he had passed away. He was a member of both of my choirs. He was a member of the Listowel Choir, which is the North Kerry Community Choir. And he also travelled to Killarney the same day, because I have one choir in the morning and then I have the other choir in the evening, the Killarney Chamber Choir. So he used to come all the way over.
Well, some people double up.
Oh, he doubled up, and he absolutely loved it. He's a dear friend to all of us and a lovely singer. And, you know, he just loved to sing. He loved life.
Yeah.
And we miss him dearly. So we'll be remembering Bill on the night as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell it, like, because I know as an individual performer, you're outstanding, but what's it like having choirs then? And
oh, it's great. It's obviously completely different because you're leading a group of singers, you know, people that come from all walks of life, you know, that just love to sing.
Yeah.
They mightn't be a soloist, you know, like myself, but these are people that might sing at home. You don't have to read music, that just come in, get together, and we sing as a group. I don't have any soloists. All the harmony is arranged by myself.
Yeah.
So you're not, you don't have to read music at all.
Yeah.
You know, we all kind of just divide up the parts and we have a wonderful hour.
Make a hand of anyone, like.
Oh, I can teach anyone, Joe. Leave it to me.
Or is your laughing away there?
No, she's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
People wouldn't be able to read music, but they still feel very much part of the choir. Yeah.
Was it intimidating for yourself, Marish, to join? What way is
well,
it?
When I was thinking back about when I first joined a choir many, many, many years ago, I was almost like mesmerised by the sounds that enveloped me, you know, all around me. And since then I'm hooked because I love it, because it's not just, as Mary said, about individual contribution, it's about the collective. You know, like your voice dissolves with all the others into this collective and commune, and it's absolutely great. And Mary painstakingly and lovingly does the harmonies with each of us. And after a while, you know, we stick with it and nothing is too big for us, I think, at this stage. We gain in confidence because it's about the practice, going back, going back, going back, and doing it with such care. And Mary, also, can I say, she demands. She's a great teacher.
Are you a tough taskmaster, Mary?
Well, no, she's very nice, but she demands. And, you know, like, if you demand, you'll get the standard. So she doesn't take things for granted. She wants us to achieve.
Yeah.
We all know that.
But that's good, because it's not patronising, then it's like proper.
Absolutely not.
Stay with us, because we have to go to a break, but I want to find out more about these choirs and this wonderful event that's taking place with the Kerry Hospice Foundation on Wednesday, May 20th. But we'll take a break with more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney. Serving the finest seafood in a cosy, modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie.
Yeah, and I hope you're enjoying the programme. I meant to say as well, we were talking about Iron Mike and Mick Murphy, the Iron Man, and there is going to be a statue unveiled to him this summer as well. And I will be doing something on him in more detail. And I met Christy Reardon from Cathras Éireann, the famous videographer and documentary maker, last week, the week before, and he was telling me that he's a lot of... interview footage himself and Wee Shee Fogarty did with Mick Murphy, and that he'll give me a few excerpts of that, so we'll be playing that, so that'll be brilliant to hear as well. We're joined in studio by Mary Cullerty O'Sullivan, who along with her two choirs are doing an event for the Kerry Hospice Foundation on Wednesday, May 20th in the Listowel Arms Hotel at 7:30, and Marish O'Leara is here with us as well. Mary, there's not just music, you were saying to me there in the break, there's poetry as well.
Oh yes, we're having poetry as well, and I'd just like to read out who's doing the poetry and give them a shout out. This young man beside me, Moorish, is doing a poem, Oscoilga, for us.
Oh,
and then we have Dolores Carl, and we have Kathleen Faley, and Liz Ryan, and Padraig Sexton, and we have Tony O'Flaherty doing the piano for us.
Oh,
so it's
really
shaping
nice.
Up to be a lovely evening.
Yeah. Yes. There won't be a sing-off now between the two choirs, will there?
And no, we're actually, we're teaming up at the end. We're joining forces. We're going to do a fabulous join of forces at the end. They're going to showcase themselves individually first.
Yeah.
And then they're going to join up
and
do some fabulous numbers like Let's Go Fly a Kite, This Is Why We Sing.
Yeah.
Beautiful. It's going to be amazing.
Do you know what I was just thinking there? Like, it's the ultimate synergy and teamwork for a choir, isn't it, Marish? Like,
yes.
You know, you all have to go together. And like, I play music myself now, and sometimes you're playing along, and when you were with a group, and all of a sudden you go, geez, are we actually doing this? You feel out of body, you know, it's like a flow state, the way it just... some of the parts is better than the individual, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. You have your contribution to make, but it's not about your own contribution.
Mm.
It's about the collective.
Yeah.
And when we come together, there's about five men in the choir at the moment in Listowel, and we're all from various walks of life and ages and everything, but when we sing together, and we have a lovely song, This Is Why We Sing, and there's a line in it that music, you know, builds bridges and it tears down walls, and that's what it does. When we sing together, we have a feeling of that collective being together. Our contributions merge.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. And like they say, it's good for the soul. I think it's good for the soul, and it puts something into my heart as well.
Yeah,
that's why I love to go every Tuesday.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to miss that hour, because it means so much, because you come out, you could go in sometimes, and then Mary does vocal exercises with us, which is very important, and we appreciate that after a while, because they're every week we have to do them.
Yeah.
And then you come away and you feel, gosh, I've, you know, it's refreshed, as you say, as you just said. Your contribution has kind of merged or morphed into that collective that I spoke about.
Yeah, I got an email last night, actually. Someone heard a little birdie told me you were going to be on with me this morning, Mary.
Yes.
Hi, Joe. I want to wish Mary Cullerty the very best on your show on Saturday. At 86 years of age, I've been a member of the North Kerry Community Choir since its inception. I look forward every Tuesday morning to going to St. Patrick's Hall in Listowel, where we have vocal exercises that Maurice was mentioning, learn songs, and have a whole lot of fun. I've made some lovely friends and had some great experiences. We've done some concerts like the one we're doing on Wednesday, May 20th, and I was just checking the date there to make sure it was right. Listowel Arms Hotel for various charities. Long may we continue. Thank you, Dolores Carl. Tell us about Dolores, Mary.
Oh, Dolores is amazing. She's just a fabulous lady. I actually saw her on stage last year, you know, in the Listowel Drama Group.
Yeah.
At her age, I mean, she is just incredible.
Yeah.
Great, very witty, brings great fun to the choir.
Yeah.
And she's actually one of the ladies that will be reading a poem for us on the night.
Yeah.
Oh, we love Dolores. She's super.
Yeah, it's that balancing act, I suppose. You're very serious about what you do, but you have to have the crack as well.
Oh, you have to. I mean, I like to get the job done, as I said, and I like to have a good standard, but we have a laugh.
Yeah.
You know, we do. We really enjoy it. As Murish just said there, it's a great hour.
Yeah. And what about someone that's listening to this now and they want to maybe join the choir? Is that still a possibility?
Oh, yes. We love to welcome new members. Now, it will be September.
Yeah. And that's good. The summer's a busy time.
Well, summer's a very busy time for everyone, you know. And if people keep an eye on my... We have our own Facebook page, the North Kerry Community Choir page. So you'll get all the details when I will be shouting out for new members. Oh, we're very welcoming.
Yeah, yeah.
Love, especially men.
Yeah, yeah. But that's just a different tone in the voice. Yeah, it probably adds, doesn't it?
We love to... We have wonderful, as Murray said, we've lovely gentlemen already, but we could do with a few more, and ladies as well, obviously. Everyone is very, very welcome.
Yeah.
They're a lovely group.
Yeah, Murray, and we mentioned that, you mentioned about, you know, almost borders and tearing down borders, and like it is something that if he performed in Australia, in Africa, wherever... It's going to translate, isn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
It'll just, and you never know when I'm listening to the radio sometimes at home, a song comes through and it brings me somewhere else. You know, it transports you to that other, the sense of otherness, I suppose. I don't want to be too philosophical about it. But it's so important. I mean, it unites. It unites. And that's the great thing, the power of singing in a choir.
Did you always sing?
Badly as an individual, but again with the choir, I get a bit of confidence.
And what kind of singing would you be doing? Like, would you do a party piece, or was it like...
I'd be slow to do a party piece. But again, it has motivated me and given me confidence.
Yeah.
And I would sing in a church choir as well. But doing all these different eclectic mix that Mary has just been very good.
And tell us about that, Mary. Like, what kind of songs should we expect on the 20th?
Well, we're going to do the Galway Shawl, we're going to do the West's Awake, we're going to do the Rainbow Connection, Liam Lawton, I Heard an Angel, and Let's Go Fly a Kite. So there's a really lovely mix there. I really believe there'll be something for everybody on the night. And of course, I'm going to sing a few songs myself.
Oh, excellent, excellent. And would you be no more nervous, no, you probably don't get it as nervous anymore, but would you be more nervous yourself performing or watching your choir or, you know?
A bit of both. I think nerves are a great thing, because they really enhance the performance. I always say that to the choir as well. Because if you're not nervous, you've no adrenaline. You really have to have the adrenaline to perform well. And I always find, and I say to the choirs, after the first song or the first couple of lines, you'll be fine. It's that thing of getting up onto the stage and looking out onto the audience. You know, there are a bit of the bubbles in the tummy. But I find when you get into the song, we're fine, you know.
Yeah. Do you have to, you know, in the performance, kind of watch the way you look as well, like be smiling?
Oh,
is that
yes.
part of it as well?
Head out of the black folder.
Yeah. Yeah, because
yes.
some people, they'll be very concentrating and they might come on their, you might see it on their face.
They get lost in the folder. So I even say,
like a crutch.
I do allow the choirs to have a black folder, but... The likes of the Connemara Cradle song, Hear the Wind Blow, Love, Hear the Wind Blow, Lean Your Head Over and Hear the Wind Blow. There's no need to have your head in the folder for that. It's a case of head up, looking forward, a quick glance at the next verse and head up and do your best to keep the head out of the folder.
Yeah.
You know?
I'd imagine there's tremendous satisfaction in seeing someone come in maybe a bit nervous, maybe not that confident, and then to see them perform on a night like the 20th, to see them up there.
Oh, it is wonderful. I always like to have a goal. I always say to people, you know, when you come to the choir, as Murray said, we do the vocal exercises, which I'm a great believer in technique. Obviously, we love the repertoire side of it as well. But you really have to sing from the diaphragm. We do all that and the breathing exercises so that when you start in September and say when you come to the performance next May or next week, there's a big difference in standard. You know, people come in, they're a little bit nervous, and you know, whereas now when we're going back over the songs, people are coming in and they're laughing and they're excited to perform. There's no point in coming in week after week if you haven't a goal. Even for yourself, if there was something, I always say to them, you know, if you were going to a wedding in the summer, if there was a barbecue, it's coming into the summer party season. Try and choose two of the songs that we've done correctly and be able to perform them as an individual at your own family occasion, you know. And it's a great thing to have a goal, Joe.
Jeez, that's brilliant, yeah. Like, from a personal development point of view,
indeed,
Marsh, it's brilliant.
Indeed,
it's absolutely great.
Yeah.
As I say, people would come in, maybe wouldn't know what to expect, maybe lack a little bit of confidence. I can't sing, I can't do that. Even the harmonies might, at first, feel a little bit too demanding. But after repeating and repeating and repeating, I think that's wonderful about this choir. We go back, we repeat, and it's not a chore, as Mary said. It's something that we can see as well. Yeah. We're improving from week to week.
I'd say it's the first step is probably the most difficult thing, to go in the door and start.
Oh, it is, and I'll say something else. You know, the amount of people that I have met that were told, that are now, say, in their 40s, 50s and 60s, that were told at school that they can't sing, and they're now, I say to them, of course you can sing, because they were put in the corner or put in the back. They need to get over that.
Yeah.
You know, and move on and join a choir, whether it's my choir, whether it's a choir within Kerry. There's plenty of choice.
Yeah, because that's so true. Like, I often say this, you know, some, like, teachers or whatever, or mentors, they can give you a golden nugget, which makes you for life, but they can also give you, like, a lump of coal as well, that kind of, you know, in the brain as well, before I forget it, Marsh has always been great contributing to our documentaries and helping us. He's a great folklorist and everything else, and with our Lagamnicas, you know, your brilliant place names and all that. So we're a very talented man and knowledgeable man in studio. And that's it. They're from all walks of life, Mary, you have, which is brilliant to hear. Yeah, so tell us about the night again. Remind people, and how can they, do they book tickets? Or do they rock up on the night, or what?
No, it's a donation upon entry.
Okay.
Because I have a door prize. So donation upon entry, you get a separate ticket to the raffle. So the raffle will be going on as well, and I have lovely prizes for that. So it's the Listowel Arms Hotel on Wednesday, the 20th of May at 7:30. And we're also actually singing tomorrow morning for the Dawn Chorus.
Oh, lovely.
In Chock Shiemsa in Finuig.
Oh, lovely location.
So that will be starting at 8 in the morning.
Oh, lovely.
Good luck to us.
You'll have to be warming up earlier than that.
Warming up in the car, getting there. And there's also the Listowel Folk Choir, our singing folk group, and the Ukrainian singers. So that will be a lovely morning for anyone that wants to just come along and start their Sunday morning with a lovely mix of song.
Brilliant. Well, Gormahagiv, Marisha O'Leara, and Mary Cullity O'Sullivan, best of luck on Wednesday, May 20th in the Listowel Arms Hotel, 7:30.
Thank you so much,
and thanks,
Joe.
Thanks for coming in. Before I forget it, we had our TY week not too long ago, and we had Isla and Faye Fitzmaurice, Mabby Dorney, and of course, they're actually cousins of mine, would you believe, their mothers, Claire Dillon from Ballinskelligs, from Gaelcláiste in Kyrie, in Tralee, and they, along with classmate Isabel Jensen Listowel, were Team Net Zero, who were one of 12 teams chosen to represent Ireland in Junk Couture World's Final next year. It's a huge deal, and we will be talking more about that on Radio Kerry in next week or the week after. But congratulations to them. It's a huge achievement, and I have a photo of what they were wearing, and my God, it could grace any catwalk in Milan or anything else. Would you wear something like that, lads, at the choir, one of your choirs?
In a word, no.
But it is outstanding, and well
done.
Beautiful, to them.
Yeah,
and it's very sustainable as well. So well done to them, and congratulations. Now we're going to take a break, and after that, we're going to have our final episode of Come West Along the Feel.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across the county. Serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
Over the past number of weeks, we've followed the River Field from its source in the mountains of Rockchapel to the Atlantic Ocean at the Cashin Estuary, meeting the people, wildlife and traditions that have shaped life along its banks. In this final programme of Come West Along the Feel, we continue that journey exploring the stories, history and challenges facing one of North Kerry's greatest natural resources.
This documentary was produced by Connie Broderick and Joe McGill and is funded by Cumasún na mBan with the television licence fee.
This is Gartley Dam, just outside Killicrim, a major weir on the river for the North Kerry water supply, drinking water supply. Built in the mid-70s, there are two fish passes on the weir. As you can see, there's actually cameras. So every fish going up is actually videoed, estimated the weight and counted. So that there's a count then of how many fish travel up into the river every year.
We begin the final stage of the River Feel at the dam at Scatterley Cross, home to the lowest club on the river, the Killicrim Fionnuaig Angling Club, the last we meet on our journey. Marking the beginning of our final stage downstream, the river now turns towards the Atlantic, its waters soon to merge with the Cashin on its way to the sea. It's here, I'm joined by the club's treasurer, John O'Sullivan.
Just below the weir, there's the deep pockets where the fish hold, waiting to go up the dam. They swim along the front of the dam until they find the fish pass. They have the power to be able to swim against the current and go up. There's about 1,200 kilometres of tributaries on the Feel, which is an unbelievable catchment. In the shape of a funnel, it drains all of North Kerry, West Limerick and North Cork, and everything comes down through Scartley. Big fishing area. There's a wall and a ledge installed by the OPW years ago for protection of the land. And that's probably the main fishing area in the local fishing club. On a good day, you could see 20 guys fishing there.
Can we take a walk down to it?
You can, yeah. Yep.
Founded in the 1980s by Dan Jai, among others, Killicrim Fionnuaig Angling Club leases roughly 6.5 kilometres of water downstream of Listowel.
This is known as the wall. Just down at the bend is the sloped wall. And then beyond that is what's called the Saline, which is a couple of streams, and then you have the Creamery stream, and then for all the way down to Fionnuaig Bridge. Every section of the river has its own name. The rocks there now, you can see young salmon. There was a shoal of them. Just the water at the moment is extremely clear.
What would one expect to catch here in this area?
This would be salmon. Springfish are making a comeback. Years ago, springfish were scarce, but now springfish is probably the better part of the season. A standard springfish would be about 10 pounds weight. Salmon run is totally dependent on water level. A fish that's coming into the river now is going to be in the river until it spawns next November, and it won't eat in that amount of time. Survival over the millions of years has taught them that when the river is low, you don't even try to go up the river because it's going to be too hard, you'll spend too much energy. So they wait for the flood, and just after the flood is going down, then they make a run for it. And they go up so far. Fish have been tagged in surveys. They go up so far, and then they stop there for a couple of weeks again, and then they wait for the next flood and go up again. That's the life of the salmon. We're privileged to think that there's still salmon in the river. It's amazing when there's so many rivers in the country that are closed completely for fishing. It's a testament to the area that the river is still open for fishing.
While describing the wildlife in and around the river, John warns it could decline if the water quality isn't improved.
Well, down here you're into dairy farming. It's a big dairy area. No really tillage until you go down around Lixnaw area. Biodiversity, you have just about everything, from cranes, kingfishers, otters, you name it, it's here. And again, they live in a totally undisturbed area because all that's down here is anglers. They have the complete banks of the river to themselves, the biodiversity. The farmers can't use the bank of the river, so it's left totally to wildlife. It's very much alive. It's a living artery, if you like, through North Kerry. That is a huge asset, but it just needs that little bit more protection from everybody. There's so many state bodies involved that all have to be pulling in the one direction before there's any work done. I would say the pollution is being number one. The state can take the first step in that by improving their public sewage treatment plants. There's a second European regulation that came in, I think, 2025, so we're in the middle of it at the moment, where the water quality of rivers has to be improved. Law Pro were doing surveys over the last number of years on all rivers, monitoring what they call permitted discharges into all rivers and unofficial discharges. There is an obligation on all European governments to take action to improve the water quality in their rivers. I think we're going to pay the price for it in 10, 20 years' time if we don't take action now to protect our rivers, because the quality of life in the river and around the river will decline if we don't protect what is a major asset.
After a short walk, we come to Finnoog Bridge. Built by Con Singleton and completed in 1911, its 60-metre span linking Finnoog to Killocrim. From the bridge, John describes the view upstream.
This is one of the most scenic spots on the local river anyway, the view from Finnoog Bridge up. Looking at it, you can see even birds as far as you can see now. It's prime wildlife. There are some artificial blockages. Locally we call them gambines. Gabions, I think, would be the proper name. Stone-filled cages that are put in by the OPW to keep the water at a certain height above them so that the water doesn't fall too low and it keeps the water at a certain level all the way up. These are not a major issue for salmon going up the river from down here because it's only in very, very low water that you can actually see these mini weirs, I suppose you could call them. In higher water or normal water, these are covered completely and the salmon have no problem in going over these.
Crossing over the bridge, we look downstream, where the tidal reaches of the field first take hold.
It tends to get a bit quieter down at this side. As we see just below the river now, there's a stream called Joreen's Stream, is the local name. Again, a very good spot for salmon fishing, but it tends to flatten out as you go further. It gets more tidal. So from here down, it's flatter, quieter, and then once you hit Belly Duff and the ferry bridge, it goes into a major river due to the tide again.
Below Finnoog Bridge, the field widens and slows, beginning to feel the pull of the tide. Fisheries Inspector with Inland Fisheries Ireland, Catherine Hayes, describes this part of the river.
As the river field slows and widens below Finnoog, it begins to feel the influence of the tide. So the tidal influences from both the field and the cachan estuaries, and that brings a shift in our wildlife and the habitat that we have here. The tidal action can cause fluctuations in water level and salinity, and that creates some brackish environment where you've got specialised fish that will live there. This transition supports a different range of fish than we've talked about already in the river, and I might mention some of those later. And habitat wise you'll also see the development of mudflats along the banks, so when the tide goes out you see big banks of mud along the river, and these areas are incredibly productive and important feeding and nursery grounds for fish and also for birds as well. So if you're here during low water, like, you might see a different variety of wading birds and waterfowls, and they feed on the invertebrates that are living in these mud banks. From a survey that IFI conducted in 2008, we recorded 15 different species of fish that live in either the field or the cachan estuary. So some common species that we might have heard of before, like mullet, flounder, sprat and different kinds of gobies. And then more uncommon species like a five-breaded rockling or a Nelson's pipefish or brill. And a lot of these would be juvenile fish, so they use the brackish water as nursery areas because there's an abundant amount of food. And then, like I mentioned, in terms of birds, we'd have like maybe regshank, oyster catchers, curlews, and then you'll also find like herons and egrets, and then a lot of cormorants and shags as well in the area.
So, Connie, where we are now, we're going up along the bank of the river, up onto the high bank, and we're looking out onto the river field. The townland here is Coolagown, and we're in kind of locality of Innismore as well then. And we're looking all right across the river here, then you've got Dyshard Graveyard right down on the bank of the river. Dyshard's in the parish of Lixnaw. Beyond it there then, just around the bend below there, the Combe as we call it, you go around and the River Gale comes in, joins the river feel, and then upriver then the river's taking a sweep around that way. Then again you've Lixnaw on the other side, and you can see like the Slievemish Mountains and the Stax Mountains off in the distance. All down this stretch of the river, of course, is very much a different landscape because it's flowing through completely flat land.
Now, that's the first part of the final episode of Come West Along the Field. We'll take a break and we'll have the news and we'll have the final part of episode 5 of Come West Along the Field after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars. Packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
Now, later on, we'll have our Kerry County Council Creative Kingdom letting you know what's going on in the arts world, and we'll be heading towards Listowel because Listowel Writers Week is coming up very soon. But first, let's return to Come West Along the Field. In the second part of this final episode, historian Tom Dillon joins us in Innismore, where the River Field has shaped the history and livelihoods of local communities for generations.
Following the course of the field, I arrive in Innismore. Its name comes from the Irish Inish Moor, meaning the Great Island. It's here on the riverbank I meet historian Tom Dillon, who shares how the River Field has always been central to life here.
The River Field has played a huge role in the lives of people in the Innismore area, Coolagone, Killacrim and the surrounding townlands over centuries. People found a livelihood out of the salmon fishing from the river, and also then people would have cut the gilcock there, or the reed that grows along by the verge of the river. It was actually used to thatch the houses down in the dare. And then also people years ago used to use the river for transporting sand, so there was actually a quay on the riverbank up here in Innismore going away back in the 1830s, and then that was replaced by another quay farther upriver in Ballyhorrigan. They had big boats and they used to go down with the tide down to the mouth of the Cashin, and they'd fill the boats then with sand and bring the sand up the river into the quay, and the sand then would be used on the land as fertiliser for the farms, like, and to improve the soil as well. There was an awful lot going on always with the rivers. When you think about it, years ago people nearly lived their lives down here, that, you know, especially during the fishing season. It was a way of life, but and it also provided a livelihood for countless families that lived all along the bank of the river down here below Listowel, all the way down through in a small Ballyhorrigan, down in the Ballyduff side, down the Ferry Bridge and the Cashin as well. It was of huge importance, really, like, you know. So, and people of course would have farmed the river as well along by the river years ago, and you can hear the silage trailers there in the background as we're talking, like. So it would have been important, like, you know. Going way back in the 19th century and even before it, salmon from the River Field used to be exported to the London market. And that was that industry, that export industry, was started off by a man called George Hewson of Innismore. So there was a big house in Innismore many years ago, and the Hewson family lived there. They originally came from Castle Hewson down near Askeaton in Limerick. And the salmon used to go down from here by horse and cart down to Glynn, then to be put on a steamboat which operated up and down the Shannon, then carried down to Limerick, which was where the railways had reached at that point in time, and then they were sent off by railway to Waterford and London, and eventually then the railway extended from Limerick to Newcastle West. And through Hewson's own initiative, he was a big driver in the project of getting the railway from Newcastle West through Listowel, through his own estate here in Innismore, and then on back by Lixnabby, Dorney, to connect up with Tralee. So he was a very, very well-known figure, and he was famous as well for his involvement in the fishing and involvement in fishing rights. He started off the export industry, and then that was taken over then by his son in turn, and eventually then it was taken over again by Mixam Costello, who fished up the river in Ballyhorrigan, and eventually came to Finbar McAuliffe. So by Finbar McAuliffe's time, the salmon were being exported from Kerry Airport. So they went from horse and cart to the train to airplanes. In young George Hewson's time, the salmon were being sent to Waterford, Limerick, Dublin and also Manchester, as well as Billingsgate Market. When they would be selling their fish to the fish merchant, there'd be so much money kept back, and that money then would go towards funding the hatchery, which was in the river above Listowel Bridge, the townland there, Ballinruddery. The hatchery was founded there in 1906 on the night of Kerry's estate. That kept going into the 1940s and 50s again, like. And they brought in a man called Finch Hatton, I think he was English, and they set up the hatchery, and they used to take the eggs from the salmon, like, you know, and they'd actually hatch them then, and they'd have kind of runs, like, you know, made up with the water going through them, where they'd actually hatch the fry, and they'd have them into a certain size, and once they reached a certain stage in their development, they'd take them up the river then, and they'd put them back into the river. So and take them in milk tanks as well. I remember Anne showing me a photograph years ago, and they had the milk tanks, and I was wondering what were they doing, like, you know. But that kept the river stocked. That was part of the industry, you know. So they weren't just taking the salmon out of the river, they were putting them back as well.
The story of the fishing rights on the Feel stretches back to the time of the Normans, first granted by the King of England to the Fitzmaurices, lords of Lixnaw and Kerry. Through the centuries, those ancient rights endured, brought once more into contention in the Feel fishery case of 1923.
There was a famous fishery case then in 1923. It was called the Feel fishery case. They actually succeeded in the High Court in Dublin in actually pleading their case, the landlords did, Hewson and Florence O'Halloran. She had an estate as well on the other side of the river in Ballyhorgan. The issue with that court case, it went on at the same time as the Civil War. The Public Record Office was actually destroyed when the four courts were bombed because the fires spread to the Public Record Office and burned centuries and centuries worth of historical documents which the landlords would have been relying on to establish their claim for private fishing rights in the river. So they had to go and find them in other kind of repositories and libraries, and they were able to do that, and they succeeded in 1924. They actually established their right of private fishing, and it went from a place called the Quay in Ballyhorgan. That was the highest navigable point in the river. So from there, just above the railway bridge in Ballyhorgan, then that was private fishing right, and Hewson had that, and no one else could go in there. But Hewson as well then was shot in 1920 as well, all over the fishing rights as well, and it just shows like how intense things could get, like, you know. And Kilmarnock House was burned in 1920 as well, and Sir Arthur Vickers was killed, and there is evidence there that in the years leading up to that, there were fishing disputes going on up there as well, and involving some of the men that were involved in the burning, like, you know. So a sidelight in all of that was one of the people that Hewson took to court in the Feel fishery case was a man called Michael Costello, also called Mixum, and he had the fishing there in Ballyhorgan. He was involved in the IRA at that time, and he actually spent time in prison. He was in Spike Island, I think, was one of the places he was interred. He was anti-treaty then when it came to the Civil War. And on the eve of the 1923 general election, there was an election rally in Lixnaw where Finan Lynch, the Minister for Fisheries, was actually came into the village, and he was heckled. And there was a Free State officer with him, and he opened fire on the crowd and shot Mixum Costello in the chest. And Mixum survived, and he eventually took over the export then of salmon to London, and he bankrolled an awful lot of local people as well who wouldn't have the money to get set up with their net and their boats, like I was telling you, and the licence. That's the story of the fishing rights, you know. There's a lot of history to it, like.
A fourth generation fisherman, Tom recalls when net fishing was a familiar sight along this stretch of the river.
Typically what would happen here, the hauls would be made with a boat and a net. Up here in this part of the river in the Feel, you would have a three-man crew. So generally you'd have one person standing on the bank with the end of the net, and then you'd have two in the boat. So one would be rowing and the other one would be throwing out the net. They'd go across the river first, and then they'd have to turn, and usually turn downriver. You were legally obliged to leave the length of an oar and the width of the boat from the other bank of the river, because otherwise no salmon at all would go up. So the fishery laws came in around the time of Queen Victoria, and that's why that gap over on the other side of the river when you're making your haul was called the Queen's Pass. And then once the net was played out, then the other end of it would be brought in, and you'd have to haul it in. You'd have the cock rope would be on the top of it, that would be floating on the surface of the water. You'd have the lead roped in down the bottom to be weighed down with the lead, and you'd bring it in and you'd catch your salmon that way. You know, and people would have to take turns in the hauls as well then, like, you know. So generally it was whoever had their net mounted first in the boat in the morning, they had first haul, and then so on. That's the way it would work. The other thing, I suppose, as well, then to mention would be the type of boats that they were using years ago. They were timber boats, and the design of them was unique to the Feel as well. The boats were clinker built, which means that the planks would overlap, and they were built as well then with a distinctive kind of a V shape in their profile. So it meant, because the bottom of the river is muddy, if you had a flat bottom boat, it would actually stick to the mud. So when you had the V in it, it would kind of rock like that, and it would stop it from sticking in the bottom of the river. And also it took into account as well the weight of the net when it would be put into the back of the boat, that is, again, it would stop it from getting stuck in the mud. And the boats then down the Cashin would be kind of the same design, but they'd be a bit bigger, because the Cashin would be a much bigger river. Down the Cashin, they're called ganglers. So the boats, again, would have been used for many different reasons aside from fishing.
Downstream from where we stand, the Feel is joined by its largest tributary, the Gailey. Rising in West Limerick, it flows for about 42 kilometres. A lively spate river with fast water and a strong brown trout fishery.
The Gale would be the main tributary of the Feel, right? And that rises then up in West Limerick, comes down from RT through my van, We'd call it the Gael, but I suppose the official name you see down on the maps would be Gailey. And there's actually a parish of Ballydunahoo, which was an old civil parish of Gailey, was there. It was quite close to the river. There was kind of a church and a graveyard there as well. Some of them said it was named after the Gaels. So you had Feel was one of the Milesians. The Milesians were the ancestors of the Gaels. That was where our Gaelic culture kind of was founded, by them coming to Ireland. Their story was kind of written in the Book of Invasions. And the story was that they actually sailed up the river and settled at Gailey. The other meaning as well then of the name Gael was it comes from the Irish word for mist. Drummond Bridge passed over the River Gael, and Drummond Bridge was built in 1826 like as well, so a beautiful bridge as well. There was another little tributary as well flows into the Gael then called the Guayra. And I heard people saying as well that the sea trout, the white trout, would actually go up there and spawn. There's a tiny little stream like, and then go way up, and it nearly goes up into the outskirts of the Stole. There's a hillock there on the outskirts of the Stole in the townland of Dara, and it's called the Canuckon. It's built of gravel, and the story was that monks again drew gravel from the River Gael on the northern side and gravel from the River Feel, and they made this huge high mound, which is still there. Like, you can still see it if you travel along the Bog Road there in Derry, you'll spot it. The sea trout used to actually go up there, and they'd be spawning in the stream along up along there. But Guayra then means like kind of a wooded place. Guayra Glass was the what you'd see down on the old maps, like Glass would be like a stream.
Can you tell me where we're standing at the moment?
So we've moved down River now, Connie, and we're in a place called Ballyoneen, and it's right opposite us is the joining of the River Brick and the River Feel. The river is tidal where we are now, right? The Brick comes into it, that how much the river has silted up there as well. There's nearly like an island out there at low tide now where you'd see it at the Brick. And then below the ferry bridge as well, you'd notice that there's an awful lot of the river silted up. The Brick, from what I was judging by the maps, kind of rises somewhere back nearly in Ardfert direction. Not as far as Ardfert now, but back in that direction, and it comes on, like, you know. So Brick as well, of course, comes from the Irish word for brook, badgers, like, you know. And they actually brought in a law in the 19th century where the mouths of the rivers were defined, and that meant that you couldn't fish within a half a mile either side of where a river joined a main river. So there was actually a fishing hall then between the Brick and where the Gael meets it, and it was called Trag. And that hall then couldn't be fished anymore, kind of fell into disuse. Just below us there then as well, where we are here in Ballyoneen, there's a river as well coming in, and I've heard them call that the Glora River because it rises up in the townland of Glora as well, just outside Ballydunahoo.
The Brick runs for about 11 kilometres before joining the Feel. Its waters once feeding the canals and gardens of the old Kerry estates. It's at this confluence that the Feel changes name, becoming the Cashin as it nears the sea.
From here on down then, the River Feel changes its name to the Cashin. The name of it comes from the word Cassan, which means pathway. And there were no roads, and people used rivers as pathways into around the countryside. So they would have used boats to travel up and down the river. And that's where the word Cassan or Cashin comes from. So right across the way from us here, we're actually looking at the Round Tower in Ratoo. And there's actually a canal way then that comes from the river up to opposite the gate in Ratoo. People in the Great House in Ratoo used to get in the boat, and they'd come down the river then, and they'd use it kind of as pleasure craft, like, you know, they'd enjoy a trip on the river. And that was the same in Lixna as well, further up along the river there, along the River Brick. So they would have used boats as well there on the river. And there was a place as well where they used to swim there. There was a bush on the bank of the river and the Brick as well where they used to swim. That's kind of where Lick Snag gets its name as well. Lick is a flagstone, and snarved in, so the swimming stone of the Brick. Down here then, just below us from where we are in Ballyoneen, you can look down and you can actually see the traffic passing on the ferry bridge as well down there. And for a long, long time, there was a boat that would carry people across. And that would have been in existence right up into the 19th century when they built the Cashin Bridge.
Yeah, come west along the field there, and we'll hear the final part of episode 5 after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals available in store.
Now it's time to return to the final episode of Come West Along the Field.
Flooding was a constant problem along the Lower Field and Cashin Estuary. For much of the early 20th century, North Kerry's appeals for drainage were overlooked until the 1950s, when work finally began on the Cashin drainage scheme.
The money for the Feel and Cashin drainage scheme came from what was known as the Marshall Aid Plan, and this was money put together to kind of help Europe recover after the Second World War. They drained the rivers, they deepened the channel of the river, they widened the river, they built up the banks either side, and they also built kind of drainage systems as well with sluices in the back of them. And all of that helped alleviate the flooding. They started at the mouth of the river down at the Cashin, and on the field they came all the way up as far as Listowel Bridge. So they would have built up the banks and used the soil out of the middle of the river to build up the banks. And that's why today you have kind of like the high banks and the low banks outside them on the riverside. And really, you know, it's thanks to that, really, that flooding was a thing of the past. One man in particular played a huge part in making it happen, and that was Paddy Finucan. He came from Liselton. He was the TD for North Kerry from the 1943 election all the way up to 1969. And he constantly raised the issue about drainage in the field as well, like, you know, that time in the Cashin area. The Feel and Cashin drainage scheme began then in 1951, and it went all the way then up to, I think it was 1957. It kind of, I was trying to find a date when it would actually finish. Provided huge employment as well then for people in North Kerry. Mm-hmm. So the cost of the drainage scheme as well was $1,250,000 or $1.5 million. Massive money for all the work that went into that time. And they brought in huge drainage machines as well then that were working down around the Cashin. They had one that would suck out the sand and the silt out from the middle of the channel in the Cashin, and they were using that to make up the banks. And then they had other ones as well. Then there was a famous one then, it was a Marion dredger. And when the scheme was coming to a close and men were likely to lose their jobs and have no more employment, the Marion dredger anyway famously went bogging in the townland of Ballyoneen, and it was there for, I don't know, did it take a few weeks or something to get it dug out? The place where it went in anyway, the name of that field today is the Marion Meadow. It's in McMahon's, and seemingly it was the biggest tourist attraction in North Kerry that time. And then there was a song written about it. There was a local man called Paddy Delane from Gort de Crossan. He wrote a song about it. He was known as the poet of the Cashin drainage scheme. The song was basically about how they would have to get Superman to come and lift it because it was so heavy. So eventually they got it out. The words of the song kind of began, "Now young and old, I pray you hold your breath while I reveal this wonder tale that happened by the lovely River Feel. Concerning these are engineers of the Cashin drainage plan, how by accident, more than intent, they called in Superman." So the real Superman then was, it was Almonds actually, the planter, they came, and it was them that actually got it out, like, you know. But that was the story of the Feel and Cashin drainage scheme. Like,
so we're here on the bank of the River Cashin, or the Cashin estuary, just near Belly A, just below Belly Bunyan, probably one of the widest parts of the river. And the estuarine habitat at the mouth of the River Feel is unique because it serves as a vital transition zone for fresh water and river mixes with salt water. So that's why we said we get some of the brackish water. And that, you know, like we mentioned, hosts a lot of different species, both freshwater and marine species. So it's a good transition zone for our species, like our salmon and our sea trout. And eels use it when they come in as well, and lamprey use it. And then, like I mentioned, we've got those 15 different species of fish. Like, you know, I suppose if I asked you how many species of fish would have lived in the Cashin, you'd never have come up with 15. So it's quite a wide range of fish and different kind of fish that people wouldn't be used to seeing, especially the marine species. And as we mentioned as well, it can host a wide range of the wading birds. And a lot of migratory birds come here as well to use the estuary. And this would be a site of the traditional draft net fishery that would have taken place on the field. This was, unfortunately, since 2019, when the river went catch and release, the commercial fishery just can't operate on a catch and release river. 2018 was the last commercial draft net fishery here, and it became a brown tag fishery. So some of our fisheries in Ireland are brown tag fisheries, so they allow a very small angling catch. So they have a lottery, and you enter your name and you get a brown tag, and it allows you to go out and catch and retain one salmon. So that year we had, 2018, we had a brown tag fishery. And like that, if you caught a salmon, you had to ring us and tell us you caught a salmon, and then we'd give you another brown tag to go. Now, our brown tag fishery wasn't that small. It was actually quite bad. There was probably no need to have a brown tag fishery anyway that year. But the commercial catch was only 800 salmon, which is small. Like, you know, they're taking the commercial catch, like, they could be taking 3,000 salmon. Like.
And would the commercial catch go for the same time as the fishing season? You're talking March, so September.
So when I started working here, they would have started on the 1st of June, so they would have fished June and July. So in June, they were only allowed to fish 4 days, so they were allowed to fish Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, into Saturday morning, and then it was closed Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Then they had this thing called safety days. Now it was, is more aimed at the drift net fishermen. So when the drift net fishermen used to be here before 2006, they had a thing called safety days. So if they couldn't go out fishing because, say, it was a gale force 6 or 7 or 8, they could ring up and say, look, this is the weather, we checked the weather, and they'd give them a safety day so they could bag that day to go fishing on a closed day in July. So then the July fishery would have been 5 days a week, then Monday to Friday, closed at the weekends to give the salmon some bit of a chance. But I suppose when they had loads of salmon, when the lads over there had the place filled with salmon, they would have been net fishing here from February. Like, they would have made good livings out of it, like, you know, yeah, back in the day. Like, it's looking across to the Cashin village there, and, you know, you would have a lot of fishermen that live over there. And back in the day, they would have said, like, you would have fish purchasers, buyers coming over from London to buy truckloads of salmon to take back to London to sell in Billingsgate, you know, one of the most famous fish markets probably in the world.
Over the series, we've seen how the field catchment is facing a range of pressures, from agricultural runoff and wastewater discharge to erosion along drained and weakened riverbanks. Added to this are invasive species and the growing effects of climate change, bringing heavier floods, changing flow patterns and warmer waters. Fisheries Inspector Catherine Hayes outlines the work Inland Fisheries Ireland plan to carry out to address these challenges and protect the river Feel for future generations.
We'd like to see some riparian habitat restoration, so where native trees and shrubs are planted along our riverbanks. That's going to help stabilise those banks, provide shade to help regulate water temperature. And that's going to improve not only the habitat complexity for fish, but also for, you know, our terrestrial mammals as well. Then in relation to pollution reduction, just to see the continued partnership with the agriculture sector, with, you know, ASAP and Chagask and with the county councils. And that's going to help to reduce the nutrient runoff into our rivers. And also with Uisge Éireann, you know, having their plans in place to upgrade their wastewater treatment plants and their water treatment plants, so we're not going to get that point source pollution that we would have in the river. And then finally, I suppose for IFI, it's, you know, identifying and upgrading and removing the barriers that are causing problems for fish passage through the rivers. You know, we've got a lot of funding schemes and grants that are available to especially angling clubs or landowners. And these can help finance projects like riparian planting or invasive species removal or fish passage improvement. And, you know, we can also offer some technical advice to people if they want to take on projects. The people, you know, who live and work and use the river Feel, you know, they genuinely care about the river and they want to have, you know, a healthy river and a healthy river Feel for future generations.
It's amazing to think, Catherine, for the small spring high in Rockchapel that wound its way through towns, fields and generations of people, has finally reached the Atlantic here at the Cashin. What a journey. What a river.
From its rise in the mountains of North Cork to where it meets the Atlantic south of Ballybunion, the River Feel winds for some 75 kilometres, shaping the land and the people who live beside it. From Mockchapel to the Stole, and from the Brainock to the Brick, the Feel story is one of memory, resilience and connection. As it becomes the Cashin River and flows into the sea, the work to protect it continues, ensuring this river and the life it carries will endure for generations to come. Its story, like the river itself, lives on in the people who call the Feel their own.
The River Feel is really the lifeblood of North Kerry. I couldn't imagine living without being close to the River Feel. And no matter where I went in the past, no matter where I was, I'd always think of the River Feel. To me, it is part of my life, really, and part of living. It will always be.
No, we're really lucky, like, to have the river on our doorstep, you know, and like, it's a place, like, where people love to connect to. Lads coming down, live along the river, and they'd be standing even just looking at the river. They might not do anything. They might go for a walk along the river. They don't need to be fishing or doing anything, you know, but it connects an awful lot of people and an awful lot of places as well.
It's an absolute magnificent ecological living thing. We're only the guardians of this resource. We're only passing through. It's an unbelievable natural resource which cannot be replaced, and our job is to try and mind it and protect it and hand it on as best we can to the next generation.
You
Yeah, that's come west along the field there, and it is up on our podcast section of our website. If you've missed any of the five episodes, you can listen back there. Connie Broderick produced, and well done to Connie there. He did a great job. And thanks a million to all the contributors as well that helped to make it the programme it was. And I hope you enjoyed this series. Now, after the break, we'll have our Kerry County Council Creative Kingdom letting you know what's going on in the arts world.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy-to-cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer ready meals available.
Now, it is the second Saturday of the month, so that means it's time for our Kerry County Council Creative Kingdom letting you know what's going on in the arts world around the county. And we'll be speaking to our very special guests very, very shortly. But first, as always, we'll speak to Kate Kennelly, Arts Officer with Kerry County Council. Kate, how are you this morning?
I'm very well, Joy. And you were going to put a special in there for me too, weren't you?
I was, of course, extra special.
You were very important. Very well. No, thank you, Joe. And good morning to all your listeners. So since I last saw you, Joe, it's been very, very busy. And as you know, we're coordinating information for Cronoon and Oak. So I'll go through that with you when you've spoken to your other guests.
Mm-hmm.
I was also back in the wonderful Féilín Ó Bealtaine, back in Danganí Cúis. It was absolutely fantastic. A number of exhibitions as well as performances. I didn't get to go to them all, Joe, but the standard was just fantastic. And one of the things that really stayed with me, I was at an exhibition up in the Kerry ETB building, and you had professional artists, but you also had community participants. So people who hadn't maybe painted or exhibited before. And there was this lovely young man with Down syndrome, and his exhibition was just fantastic. And I was asking him what was his favourite piece, and he was extremely proud of the work. And I was back there with Marina, who's with Alina Gilta, and we were admiring the exhibition. And as I went to read the piece he had about the work, the opening line is, "When I paint, my mind is free." And I just thought, you know, isn't that such a magical thing to have and to be able to say? And if you look at how creativity actually nourishes us as people and can benefit us as people, it's something that I think a lot of the arts festivals in the county do shine a light on. So there was a lot of professional artists work there as well, which was outstanding. But it's really about the people and the likes of Féilín Ó Bealtaine, and I know we'll be going on to Writers Week. You know, it's the people, Joe, that are the magic that make it happen. So on that note, I might hand over.
Yeah, and just if you can, just a few words on Listowel Writers Week. It's taking place from the 27th to the 31st of May. It's Ireland's oldest literary and arts festival. And Kate, it has a special place in your heart as well.
It has, absolutely. It is nearly the same age as myself, Joe. I think we're around the same age. But absolutely, because like that, I think Uncle Brendan was one of the founding people, as was the late, great John B., whose daughter will be coming on shortly. But Writers' Week, look, it's pure magic. And, you know, when you go up to Listowel to experience Writers' Week, you are really experiencing the sheer richness of literature and creative writing at so many levels. And again, it's the ownership and the valuing of the local community, but it's the level of expertise as well in the area, because, you know, anyone who's been involved at Writers Week, they could run a festival upside down. They're just so experienced, and you know, they really know what they're bringing to the table. And I think Writers Week can give any festival across the world a run for its money. So I know you've two fabulous ladies here to talk you through the programme, Joe, and I'd certainly be encouraging your listeners to try and attend, and just to maybe refer them to our arts website as well, because the arts.kerrycoco.ie, we do have the Kerry Arts Festival and Events calendar, and just to make sure people don't miss out on all the fabulous offerings. I was looking at our calendar there, Joe, and there's over 40 festival and events, and there's actually two missing off it. So you have the Patrick O'Keefe Festival in October and Design Kinmare, which will be happening in November, and they're two fantastic ones as well. But, you know, if you look at other counties, like Kerry has such an offering, it's really above and beyond. And it, again, it's reflective of the wealth of culture and creativity in the county. And it's on our social media as well. And you know something? We'll drop some of the hard copies down to Radio Kerry for your desk if you'd like some, Joe.
Yeah, lovely. Excellent. I think you've drawn people now when you said it's the same age yourself. They'll be thinking, is it only 21 years going, the festival?
But oh, listen to them. wish, Joe.
And now I'm delighted to say from the festival we have Maura Logue, who's the festival curator, and we also have Joanna Keane O'Flynn, who is a director. Joanna, I'll start with yourself. 50 years going now, what a legacy this festival has left and it continues to leave over the last 50 years.
Joe, it's great to be on Radio Kerry and to be in the arts office with my great friend and fantastic supporter of Writers' Week, Kate. Well, you can add another 5 onto the 50 there. We're 55 years young. I can remember the festival. I'm a little bit over 55. A woman should never tell her age on radio, especially Radio Kerry, worse again. But I can remember being at all the festivals, and I even have a little kind of old-fashioned lanyard that says Joanna Keane Clapometer. So it's going great. We're delighted. Thanks to Maura Logue, our wonderful, ingenious curator. I always call her the creator at this stage, because she has created an amazing pick and mix of wonderful literature and events for us all to feast over and enjoy from the 27th to the 31st of May in our lovely little town called Listowel.
Yeah, before we go on and we talk about the programme, I know you wanted to have a special mention for Brenda Wolfe, who sadly passed away recently.
Yes, we're all very sad in the festival. All of the board and all of our members are all heartbroken at the loss of Brenda. She died too soon in our eyes. Her shop was open in the town, one of Ireland's only independent bookshops, for the last 20 years. It was a refuge, a sanctuary. It was a safe haven. You could go in there and she could give you a book and prescribe a book to your mood. And she was a mighty stalwart. She was on our old festival committee, and she would always recommend excellent books. She thought outside the box. And funnily enough, and sadly too also, Mick McConnell has passed, and he was a great friend of our festival, and he was one of Brenda Wolfe's best friends, as was his lovely wife Maura. And we're going to have an almighty celebration of the wonderful, we're going to have an homage to Mickey on the Sunday of the festival, and we're going to have our young singers and balladeers. We're going to have Lorraine Nash, we're going to have Brian Murphy, and also really good friends of Mickey. We're going to have Gabriel Fitzmaurice and his very good friend Dennis Leahy performing a concert in tribute to him as a kind of a last hurrah on the Sunday of the festival.
Oh, lovely. No doubt they'll have nice words to say about them as well. May Brenda and Mickey rest in peace. Maura, you always put together a fantastic programme. Give us a few of the highlights this year.
Well, okay. So we have about 130 events, and that doesn't even count the children's events. We've another 20 or 30 children's events. But yeah, we are delighted that the festival will kick off on the 27th with the opening night. And Joanna will probably tell you a bit more about that. But on the Thursday then from 9:30 onwards, we have the usual creative writing workshops will take place over 3 mornings, 2 mornings. We've put in a couple of masterclasses. We've Christine Dwyer Hickey's going to do a masterclass. And also then we have a really special masterclass with Colm McCann, who's flying in from New York, and Colm McInamara and narrative four, who do these specialist, you know, relaxed workshops, you know, about writing and where to start and things like that. So that is on Thursday morning. But then we have Miriam O'Callaghan is coming down, Katrina O'Sullivan is coming down, Neil Jordan, John Connell is going to give a workshop, and he's also going to talk about his latest book, Farmer's Wisdom. We have Edel Coffey, we have the crime ladies, Liz Nugent and Claire Coughlin. We have something for everybody. You know, our days will have daily debuts where we'll have new writers who are on their first books, of the likes of Dara Waldron and Neil Tully. And we will have then international writers such as Andrew O'Hagan, Andrew Miller, who was shortlisted for the Booker. Then one of our big ones politically, we have a couple of big, you know, we always like to do world affairs. Nicola Sturgeon is coming. So she was the previous leader of the SNP in Scotland. So she's coming over, and she actually adjudicated our Kerry Group Irish Novel of the Year because she's an avid reader. And then we also have Jose is coming from, a poet coming from Hungary. then Fergal Keane on the Saturday, which is one of our key events. And we do this actually in memory of Frank Hayes. You know, we've lost so many such wonderful people. When I hear you talking about Brenda Wolfe there and Mickey McConnell, and Frank Hayes as well was a huge part of the Stowell Writers Week. So on Saturday, we do an event in his name, and Fergal Keane and Mick Lynch, who is the guy from London who is in the trade unions, and Irish Times journalist Sally Hayden, they're going to talk about what's happening in the world and things like that. And then on Sunday, Sunday's kind of going to be our wellness relaxing day. We're going to have Paul Mescal's mother, Dervil Mescal, is going to come about, talk about finding joy. And we've got someone with the healing session up in John B's. And we have the Ashlings are back, which are young people I know love. So the authors of that will be there. And we have Mary Ann Kenny talking about the episode. And I suppose the other things, that the ones that are really, really, you know, selling out are David McWilliams is on there on Saturday evening. And we have, obviously, as always, we have our pub trail, but we also have evening and lunchtime theatre every day. And so we're, this year we're doing a trilogy from Michael Murphy, The Man in the Woman's Shoes, and the trilogy of that, and there's special offers on that. So listen, it's absolutely, it's mad. And of course we have Irish language events taking place in the library. We have our Kirk of Cora is going to be on at St. John's. Do you want me to go on for another 3 hours?
We don't have any more time, but it's absolutely, it sounds absolutely amazing, the calibre of people that you bring to Listowel. It's just absolutely spellbounding. Where can people go for more information, and if they want you know, to know where to get tickets or anything like that?
Yeah, so, and actually two things on that. We have got our website is writersweek.ie, and then from the 30th of May, we're moving into a lovely office, which is going to be our dedicated box office just beside the Arms Hotel, and people can just call in there and book their tickets there.
Excellent. Well, Maura Logue and Joanna Keane O'Flynn, thanks a million for coming on and telling us all about Listowel Writers Week. And now I'm delighted to say we've Jesse Gilbert, who is the current filmmaker in residence, Kerry County Council filmmaker in residence. And Kate, as we always say, these residencies are so important to the county.
They are, absolutely. So this residency, Joe, is funded through our Creative Ireland Kerry programme, and it was identified from our consultation with young people that they wanted a focus on film in particular. So Jesse's residency has a strong focus on working with young people, and I let him go into detail, but huge demand for his time. He's doing great work. And Jesse, you must tell Joe what you were saying to me yesterday about nationally, that about how Kerry is a shining beacon when it comes to youth film, because it's always great to hear we're as impactful as we like to think we are, you know.
Yeah, and take that up, Jesse, and welcome to the program. Actually, before you take that up, Jesse, I just want to thank you. You were on with the TY students with us there a few weeks back, and you were absolutely excellent with them. And there was a few aspiring filmmakers there, and they really loved interviewing us. So thanks for that. But yeah, take up what Kate was saying there.
Yeah, that's no problem at all. I mean, I always love to engage with the youth, especially the transition year groups. They're a perfect age to get into filmmaking. And as I was saying to Kate yesterday, I was at the Youth Filmmaking Conference up in Dublin, and there was a map of activity for the whole of Ireland, and Kerry was lit up like a Christmas tree. There's just so much going on here with the filmmaking with the youth, which is great. And this year for my residency, I'll be continuing my work, doing kind of delivering workshops with transition year groups, youth groups, youth reach, with a special focus on the Sonar youth group operating out of Killarney. They're an amazing group, and they make wonderful films that always do very well on the national scale. They really put Kerry on the map in the youth filmmaking festival circuit. So I'll be continuing my focus on working with young people. This year, I'll also be accepting expressions of interest from community groups who want to work on documentary projects. So I'd like to do a little bit of a focus on documentary projects this year. I think documentary projects are great. They're about real people and real places, and they're a great entry point to filmmaking at large. So I'll be delivering workshops and providing resources for any groups interested in documentary filmmaking.
Excellent. And what else have you got going on?
So I'm delivering workshops with places like Kerry College. I'll be going in there in a few weeks to talk to their broadcasting course.
Oh, yeah.
And also for individuals. You know, filmmaking can be kind of a hard thing, a hard nut to crack for people. So I'm always accepting emails and contact from people who want to figure out how to get into filmmaking. And you can find my contact information on the Kerry County residency page. You can find my email there, or you can contact me through the arts office as well.
Excellent.
Joe, we actually have Jesse doing an event for Cronún an Óg as well. So, fabulous. Yeah, on the 6th of June.
What is that, Jesse, before I talk to Kate about that?
That's actually, it's a kind of collaboration. I'm working with the Sonar Youth Group. They're going to be delivering, so it's a youth filmmaking workshop run by young people who are the best positioned to know what to do when you're trying to break into the filmmaking world. So for Cronún an Óg, we're going to be doing a youth filmmaking workshop run by the Sonar Group. I'll be assisting, but I always like to let them run it. I'm there to help out, but I always like them to take the driving wheel, so to speak.
Excellent. Well, a good mentor they have in you. So, Jesse, thanks a million for coming on, and continued success with the residency.
That's great. Thanks, Joe.
Now we're going to take a break, and after that, Kate Kennelly is going to be telling us all about Cronún an Óg.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan.
Now, I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. Kate Kennelly is still with us for our monthly Creative Kingdom, Kerry County Council Creative Kingdom, letting you know what's going on in the arts world. And we're going to be talking about Cronún an Óg now, Kate, but you also have an announcement. That's my trumpet for you.
I do indeed. Thank you, Joe. That was very good. So yes, our Culture Night call out. We had initially put a deadline on the 15th of May for people to revert with ideas for Culture Night. But to be honest, we're extremely busy in the office at the moment. There's an awful lot happening. So we're not going to get to actually finalise the programme this side of June, really. So I'm extending the call out to the 12th of June. So people have until the 12th of June, Joe, to apply to be part of Culture Night. Now, we have an online application form, but if people are having any difficulty with it or finding that they can't say what they need to say in that, all they need to do is email into arts, just arts at kerrycoco.ie. And we'd be delighted. The more, the better. I have been speaking to people across the county, and there's some fabulous ideas already for Culture Night. And with the EU presidency, Joe, we have an additional budget for Culture Night if people want to shine a light on an EU dimension of culture in Kerry. So again, that call out is live at the moment, and we'd encourage people to take up that call. And just to go through a few other things, I had mentioned Féin na Bealtaine. And of course, the Port Magee traditional set dancing was last weekend. Hand It Down series is on next week coming. World Fiddle Day coming up as well. And of course, Fla Ceoil Ciarán, which is down in your neck of the woods in Carrigrohane this year. And then the girls, of course, spoke about Writers' Week. Chach Siamsa in Fionnuaig have an awful lot of activities on. So very much worth checking in with them. They're doing seasonal community events from May right through to October, November. And it's all community arts and based in Chach Siamsa Fionnuaig, which is fantastic. There is a month of May playwriting on with Clodagh Healy in Tralee. We'll be carrying details on our social media. And of course, you've the Skellig Coast Dark Sky Festival as well. The Sneem Sculpture Trail, St. John's, Siamsa, the Carnegie, Kilrellig, the grills in Killorglin as well. There's things happening all across the county, Joe. So if I can refer people to our social media, which is at Kerry Co Arts, so it's KerryCoArts, or to our website. And then Cronún an Óg. Have we time, Joe?
We have. We've about 2 minutes. Away you go.
We're cutting it tight. So there's a national website, so the Creative Ireland national website. If you click on that, and if you click on Cronún an Óg, it'll bring you in county by county. So we will have an e-brochure, Joe, available by the end of the week of the 18th of May. So we'd hope to have the e-brochure ready by the 22nd. And I can tell you, your listeners, that there are events at Kinmare, Castle Island, Listowel, Tralee, Killarney. There'll be plenty to happen. We have Dara Kinch giving some workshops. We have Tralee Pottery. We have Chris Rena with his Maker Meet. We have Drum Dance Ireland, we have the Kerry Writers Museum, we have Me and the Moon. So there's comic comic book workshops. There's mindfulness through art. There's a seashore workshop. There's explore animation. And there's growing minds through a creative garden and sensory path. There's one happy miss. I think I should go down to that myself. That's John and Kinmare. There's Little Hearts of the Community, Magic Moves, Make a Whirly Gig, a weaving project, Window of Dreams. And then there is Panels and Pencils, creating graphic novels, what else, Story Sound. So there's going to be a huge variety. There is a Nature of Self portrait workshops as well. And as I said, there's more activities landing every day, Joe, with people with more ideas. So there'll be plenty for children and young people for Cronulian Oaks. So please keep an eye on our website and the e-brochure, and it'll really be from mid-May on. We'll have all that information available.
And what date is Cronulian Oak again?
It's the 6th. Wouldn't you think I'd have started with that? It's the 6th of June.
6th of
June.
So
it's funded by Creative Ireland, and it's a national day that celebrates youth creativity, but it's administered by Kerry County Council through the Arts Office and the Creative Ireland Kerry Office.
Excellent. And that's where you'll have to split yourself in a few different pieces to make it to everything, because there's so much going on. You mentioned Fla Ciol Kiri there and it being on in Carrasaveen. I was emceeing a fundraiser actually in the Filemore Community Centre for it, and the talent that was on display, I just could not get over it. And it seems to be that the talent is getting better and better every year. As the younger people grow up and become teachers and mentors themselves, the standard just seems to be going through the roof.
Totally. And Joe, it's fabulous to see the opportunities, because even through, like, obviously COLTIS as an organization and, you know, you have other schools of music and, of course, Music Generation. So there's more opportunities now for people as they, you know, move on over 18 to actually be a music teacher or a part-time music tutor, and to actually play their work as well in so many of the festivals. And just to mention to your listeners as well, we have a Safe to Create training day this Monday in Killorglin, and that's offered by Safe to Create, and it's about feeling safe in your role, I suppose, in the creative community, and it's called Active Bystander Training. I'll also be heading up to Sligo to the Arts Council Arts Festival conference. It's on every year, and we'll be presenting there about the Kerry Arts Festivals, of which it's a huge part of what we do, Joe, as a county. And I don't say we as in me, because I'm only to the side of the delivery, but all the fantastic people involved, I've often said it, where would we be without them, you know?
Yeah, excellent. Kate, a pleasure as always. We're out of time. I look forward to speaking to you again next month. I think the year flies when I have Kate Kennelly on, because it's like we're talking about next month, and then we're into June now, like when you're talking about the Cronulian Oak, mental. But thanks a million, Kate, and look after yourself.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you.
Now, that's all we have time for on the programme this morning. My thanks to Abigail Bernard, who was on sound. Pat Kelly is on the way, so keep it here on Radio Kerry. I'll be back again next Saturday at 9 a.m. Until then, look after yourself and take care.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Because at least one day of the weekend should involve someone else doing all the cooking. Order your delicious takeaway from Quinlan's today.